What's up, guys? Welcome back to another daily Bible reading snapshot. Today we're looking at 2 Kings 18 and 19, and we're going to run across a very, very important king. Now, at this point, there are no kings in the north because all the kings we're looking at now are just in the south. So this first important king we see here is a guy named Hezekiah. Hezekiah is the most righteous king so far in the south, and in the north for that matter, the most righteous king we've seen since David. And that's saying a lot. There have been a lot of kings we've looked at, but no one serves God like Hezekiah served God. It says that he reigns in Israel, in Judah in particular, for 29 years. And he really gave his whole heart to serve God. You're going to see some of the things he does. He takes out the idolatry. He goes above and beyond what anyone else before him has done. He really starts to remove these high places. And he's doing good things. But at the same time, it says that the kingdom in the north was beginning to fall. It says 10 years after the Assyrians take the city of Samaria that we looked at yesterday, they came for Jerusalem. Specifically, the Assyrian king, now Tiglath-Pileser, is no longer the king. Now it's the guy named Sennacherib. Sennacherib is this powerful, important king in Assyria, and he's coming to dominate and to take over Jerusalem. But Hezekiah does not want that. It says for a little while, Hezekiah is trying to pay him money, but that's not going to work. That's not going to cut it with Sennacherib. He wants to take over. And when he takes over, it's going to be bad for Jerusalem. So it says that Sennacherib takes his armies, surrounds the city of Jerusalem, keeps them in there tight. A siege is what it's called. They're besieged, which means people got around them. They cut off the water supply, all that kind of stuff. So the people in Jerusalem are not doing well. But it says they are trusting God, and Hezekiah trusts God. And it says that when Sennacherib starts to attack, he brings this messenger to try to taunt the people. Sennacherib's servant comes out, Hezekiah's servant comes out, and they have this shouting match, basically, where they're arguing who's more powerful, God, the Lord, or Sennacherib, the Assyrians. So it says in chapter 19, Isaiah comes. It's crazy, like, where did Isaiah come from? Isaiah he prophesies in the same time that Hezekiah is alive. So it says that he is talking to Hezekiah. He reassures him, in fact, that God is on Hezekiah's side, that they're not going to fall as long as they trust God. And it says that Sennacherib, he starts to defy God. He starts to mock God. And Hezekiah takes this letter that Sennacherib sends, lays it out before the Lord in the temple, and he starts to pray. He gives a very important prayer. I'll read the whole thing. Verse 15 to verse 19 of 2 Kings 19. Hezekiah prays, O Lord, the God of Israel, enthroned above the cherubim, you are the God. You alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth, and you have made heaven and earth. Incline your ear, O Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, O Lord, and see, and hear the words of Sennacherib, which he sent to mock the living God. Truly, O Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste the nations in their lands, and have cast their gods into the fire, for they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone. Therefore they were destroyed. So now, O Lord our God, save us, please, from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you, O Lord, are God alone. Okay, what is he praying for? He's praying for God to prove himself to the nations. He doesn't say, God, please help us. We're in a lot of trouble. You can see that. Like, please help us. He says, no, do something and do it for yourself. Do it for your own glory. Please, God, save us. We're your people. You can save us. And when you save us, everyone's going to know that you're God. His prayer is really about God more than it is about himself. And that's a helpful insight on how we should pray. We really should be praying more about God than about ourselves. Even when we're asking things from God, it needs to be, you know, give us this day our daily bread that you provide for us. Thank you that you are so good. Like, our prayers need to be infused with that language about how God is good and how God is in control, not us. And Isaiah prophesies that Sennacherib is going to fall, and that's exactly what happens. God strikes down 185,000 men from their camp in the middle of the night. They woke up, and 185,000 men were dead. They're just dead bodies in this camp. And Sennacherib goes home, and it says, while he's worshiping his God in his house, he's killed, which is an interesting, ironic little point that God works us all together to where Sennacherib, the one who defied the Lord, when he's worshiping his God, he gets killed when he was defying God years before that. So I think the big takeaway, obviously, is that God is the only God. He's the only God who can do anything. And when we ask him for things, we need to ask him to do good things for his own glory, even here on this earth. So that's our Old Testament reading today. Let's look at John chapter 6. We're reading John 6, 22 to 44 today. It says that the people are looking for Jesus after they got the bread the day before because they want some more bread. And Jesus calls them out. He says, you guys just want more bread. You just want more signs. I'm not going to give you more signs. And they want bread. And Jesus tells them, you know what? You should desire a different kind of food. There's an eternal food that you should desire. And they're like, okay, sweet. Yeah, I mean, God gave us manna in the wilderness. What do you give us? And Jesus says, I've got some eternal food for you. I am the bread of life. That's what he says in John 6:35. And they're like, ah, are you serious? You make this a spiritual thing? Like, I thought you were going to give us some actual bread from heaven. God gave bread from heaven. Why don't you give bread from heaven? And Jesus says, I am the bread from heaven. I am the bread of life. He says in verse 35, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Think about that. He's promising something. He's promising some type of satisfaction that he can give and nothing else can give. Super important that we see this here. It says, because of this, the Jews grumbled and they said, we don't like the fact that you're calling yourself food. That sounds weird. Are we going to have to eat you? And Jesus, instead of being like, no, that's not what I meant, he actually doubles down. He says, yeah, actually, you do have to eat my flesh and you do have to drink my blood if you want any part in me. And that they really don't like that part because that offends them, that really have to eat your flesh and drink your blood. Jesus is not saying they actually have to eat his flesh and drink his blood. What he's saying is you have to get life from me giving my life. Think about it. When Jesus died on the cross, he gave his life. Even the pictures of blood and body take us back to the night before Jesus is killed, where he promises, he tells these people, you need to eat this meal in remembrance of me, where you're eating and you're drinking together and you're remembering my body and my blood spilled for you. You cannot be saved if you are not given life by Jesus's given life, right? And that's what he's saying here. And it's good that Jesus is the bread of life because he offers that for you and for me, not just for those people in that time. He's promising that anyone who trusts in him can have this bread of life. You can have this bread of life. I can have this bread of life if we trust in Jesus Christ, because this bread of life is the salvation that Jesus is offering. And that's what his mission is all about. So we need to be all about that mission too, and thankful and excited that he provides that for us, because God is good. So thanks for reading with us. We'll see you back tomorrow for another daily Bible reading snapshot.